You know, it's like a guy with a... You know, you can begin to assume that nothing's going to work. Couldn't believe it. Turned it on, everything lit up. My God, we're liable to be on the air here unless we watch it. Hello there, gang. How you doing, huh? Hey, George. things going out there in the mire and the muck of listeners' land, huh? That's there. We're here in studio land, friends, where life is rich, vibrant, and full of tremendous rewards and excitement. Bring it up there, big. I've been thinking for some time to do a little salute to sordidity. Don't you know who? Well, that's not the name of a new rock singer. No, sordidity. You're thinking of Bo Diddley. I'm talking about sordidity. Would you please give me a little mood music to bring us into the world of the sordid, please? It's the one on the other side. Yeah, the big one. Just sneak it in there. Rich and deep. This is not a musical program, friend, so don't get all excited. Please do not write a letter to the radio station demanding to know the name of the record that is being played on the Gene Shepherd Show. You will not get the name of the record that is being played on the Gene Shepherd Show. You will probably just get the back of somebody's hand, which is all you deserve. It's obviously you're missing the whole damn thing. And so tonight's program takes up that highly enjoyed but little respected area of human conduct, the sordid. Bring it up. I wish I could shimmy like my sister Kay. Shakes it and flakes it. We'd like to salute West Palm Beach. No, keep it in there. West Palm Beach, Florida. An attorney has threatened to bounce the Palm Beach County school system into court for enforcing a dress code that he insists includes a bra test for girls. Man, I'll tell you. Sylvan Burdick claimed Wednesday the school system's dress code with its so-called bra test is an invasion of individual privacy. Sylvan Burdick claimed Wednesday the school system's code invades privacy. Dr. Athelstan Spielhaus, a famed scientist who was appointed county school superintendent recently, denied the existence of such a test. Mr. Burdick maintains that girls suspected of not wearing appropriate undergarments are summoned before the school's dean of women for the test. Yeah. He said the dean, a woman, asks the girl to jump up and down. If there is too much, quote, bounce, the girl is sent home and told not to return without a bra. I wish I could shimmy like my sister Kate. She shakes it. She breaks it. Like jelly on a plate. Ba 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 ba. Ha ha ha.
baby, baby, shake it. Sing it out, baby.
That was real nice, wasn't it? You want to hear more about that bra test if you'd like to, you know, bring it into your school. It's an exciting, you know, that bounce test is a kind of an exciting new, could become intramural. Matter of fact, Dr. Edward Isley, principal of Palm Beach Gardens High, admitted several girls had been sent home for not wearing bras. But he said that the alleged bra test has never been used at his school. I kind of like that. Well, that's a little salute. Would you please reset that way? We may need that. Just we are saluting. Now, don't come around and say Shepard does a dirty show. It's not true. I merely report. I never make the news. I merely report what is. For example, would you like to hear a story of a tender romance? Real tender one? How about the little 10-inch dingy there? Just hit the little ding-dong there. Yeah, This is the tender romance department of our sordid division of man's eternal struggle to climb out of the muck and mire of, you know, just being what he is. One of our spies, by the way, who writes from Guam. Now, I know not many of you get the Guam newspaper. Would you like to hear a little item of some interest that was reported recently in the Guam Bugle? There it is. Honolulu, Alexandra the Great, a stripper with a 48-inch bust line, and a young sailor, 10 years her junior, were married in the office of a judge Wednesday in Honolulu. Robert Smith, 20, a quartermaster in the sub, Nathan Hale, married Geraldine M. Parades, better known as Alexandra, the Great 48. It was the first marriage for both of the young couple there. The red-headed Alexandra is 5 feet 10 inches tall, has brown eyes, a 25-inch waist, 42-inch hips to go with her impressive 48-inch bust. After the ceremony, Alexandra said of the courtship, "It was love at first sight." "Actually, he saw me first in Baltimore," she said. "I was appearing there 3 years ago. I have a little thing I do with ribbons. I throw them at the end of my act. He caught one." "Oh, I almost fell out of the balcony," said Smith. "He was only 17 then," lovely Alexandra said.
I kept the ribbon,"
added the sailor. Then last September, Smith caught Alexandra's act at a Honolulu nightclub.
"He walked in and said, 'I love you. Will you marry me?' We've been engaged ever since,"
lovely Alexandra said. The couple planned no honeymoon. Smith said he had a report for duty Thursday, and Alexandra is the leading stripper at Forbidden City's Backstage Lounge. She will return to the mainland Friday and work, too. After the happy couple left the judge's chambers, they returned a short while later and were kind of bugged. "We got a parking ticket while we were getting married," Alexandra said. The sailor said,
"There's no way to start out married life."
Bring it up there, baby. Just thought you ought to know that tender love is springing out everywhere. So we'd like to just take this moment. I kind of appreciate the historical overtones to it. We'd like to salute Alexandra, the Great 48. Bring it up there. Very good. Yeah, thank you very much. Isn't that nice? That'd make a great one-act play. Alexandra the Great 48. Well, she has a thing with ribbons, she does. I kind of like that. Well, you know, maybe I better not. You know, there's a lot of kids listening. And I could tell you about one of the more sordid evenings that I've spent in my life. Did any of you ever actually go? Now, come on, look me right in the eye, Jerry, and be honest with me for this minute. You too, Matt. Just be honest for this minute. Have you ever gone to a really sordid show? I mean, apart from various bachelor parties, which was a fantastically sordid show, the last one I got. But have you ever really gone to a sordid show and found yourself sitting in the middle of this crowd? You suddenly found that you had this vague feeling that you were in a great swimming horde of degenerates, and you were one of the worst. You're sitting there in the middle of it all. I kind of like this show tonight, the Salute to the Sordid. Yeah, it reminds me, this is WOR, and we are in New York, and hi, George, that's about as sordid as you can get in the 20th century. Would you please hit the sordid money button, friend?
The city. Any city. You've got to get out. This land, your land. This lake, your lake. This forest, your forest. Fawn Lake Forest. A private, peaceful family place of water and birch and pine and deer. And gee whiz, Fawn Lake Forest in Pennsylvania's beautiful Pocono Mountains. Like a breath of fresh air, we've created it the way you'd like to own it, with great care and love of the land. But you'll have to see it for yourself.
That's George, it sounds like ours.
Call us, collect, at 685-2700. Fawn Lake Forest.
What's that, 685-something number? Repeat that number there, please. Come on, you can do it. You just sneak it in there while I'm working here. The area code is 717. It's an open housing community. And according to the script here, it says, offering statement available on request. They'll send you the dope. Filing with New York Department of State is not approval of the merits of the offering. What is that great number? I'd like to have some of you call it and see if one of them fawns answer. I'll tell you. I've always had a thing for fawns. Now, it depends on how you spell fawns. Is that spelled with a U or a W? Are you sure? Now, wait a minute. You're listening. You're just assuming. Would somebody out there please give us a definition of fawn? You know, a fawn, there's two kinds of fawns, friend. Yes, indeed. In fact, well, there's the elfin kind, and then there's Bambi'sville. And I don't know. You know, I've always had a sneaking suspicion. There's no way to test these things. What is that number? It went past so quick. What is it? I'd like to find it. Will somebody please call that number and find out? They said call collect. You know, it might be great. What is it? Well, let's hear him say it. You don't have to write it down. Let him say it. I mean, let him... you mean you're not going to play it for me? Let him... No? All right, then I won't do it then. See, we've been sunk again by knaves and fools. As they say, you know. In fact, who was it? Marcel Proust, I believe. No, it was Earl Wilson, I think, who said it. He said that that we'll all be undone eventually by knaves and fools. And thank God we have been tonight. But let's see, we've got the Great Shanghai with us. So for those of you who are looking for really groovy Chinese ska, you know, and I might point out, hey, you know, that brings up a question here, you know, about Chinese food. But I don't want to bring that up at this point. Again, as I said, the kid's up. I understand Chinese food. Now, this is just a rumor that I've heard, just a rumor. I'm passing out rumors. I do not invent rumors. Now, do I invent folk mythology? Of course, it is true. I'm one of the folk. So I suppose if you can say that all of us folk invent folk mythology, that is quite possibly true. I had a hand in it. However, I had it. I don't know how quite to approach this. All right. It's late, right? I mean, I can come out and say in the Martha Dean Show, right? I can say, all right, okay. I was speaking to a medical friend of mine the other night who said the following. He said, Shepard, what are you pushing on that clam bake of yours? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you understand that, he clears his throat when he's getting medical, so brack. You understand that there is a great body of medical opinion which feels that large parts of the Chinese diet are strong aphrodisiacs. Dump, da dump, dump. Well, I would like to suggest, friends, I'm not saying this is true, but I would like to suggest that if this Sunday, if you can get up to Great Shanghai at 103rd and Broadway between 11 and 3 for $2.50, you can eat for the entire, 7, 8, 9 hours from 11 to 3? And they don't stop you. There's no time limit. They do have one ground rule that customers who eat themselves into insensibility will have to take at least a 30-minute break before beginning on the wonton again. They don't like to have any deaths on the, you know, on the horizon. I think you guys just blow up. But nevertheless, it's at 103rd and Broadway, and for 2.5, you can just go all the way. It's a brunch. And, you know, it's a Chinese word. It doesn't mean brunch, but we've used it that way. Chinese, it's a kind of an obscene thing. But nevertheless, from 11:30 until 3. And if you're 4 feet tall, they measure you. Under 4 feet tall, you can do it for half price. They don't say anything about how wide you can be, but... now, I'm not the one to tell you that it's a strong aphrodisiac. I'm reporting medical opinion here. Brack. That's certain types of Chinese food. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a sordid program tonight. Oh, you think you've heard of it? It had to happen. Would you please give me a little more of that honky-tonk on this? You had a little one there. It had to happen eventually. Are you a hijack fan? It had happened. We are now saluting a new trend. Now, you heard it first on this show, and I would like to, you know, throw out the theory that within 6 months, this will be a widespread thing. It'll spread all across the country, if not the world. From little acorns. What is it? What the hell grows from little acorns? Something. It's on the tip of my tongue. No, it's from little acorns. Stitching time. No, that's something else. But anyway, I would like to suggest a new trend is about to be... In fact, it's already sneaking out of the woodwork. Los Angeles, from whence all civilization of our time comes. Los Angeles, a 19-year-old youth threatened the driver of a bus carrying 22 persons with a broken wine bottle Thursday and told him, quote, "We're going to San Diego." He hijacked a Los Angeles City bus. Do you get the implications, friends? Do you realize what this could mean in your life? The bus jacking lasted 15 minutes. A passenger, 24-year-old Robert Davis, overpowered the would-be hijacker, Daryl Sweet, when the Southern California Rapid Transit District bus stopped at a red light in a downtown intersection. Sweet allegedly held the bottle over the head of driver.
Hey, who
was also a boy, said her husband quoted them.
He's been acting funny
for the past few days. He was charged with a new crime, bus napping. Look at that bag now. Now, wait a minute. This is going to happen, friends. It's going to happen in New York. It's going to be a guy who's going to get on at, say, 58th and Madison. He's going to pull a shiv, and he's going to say to the driver, "We're going to Flushing." And by God, you'll go to Flushing. Rampant. It's everywhere, rampant. Rampant ego. Not the two. Hold it. Cut it out, you guys. Sit down. Give him an ounce. The next thing you know, you get 10 pounds of cure. Now, you know, No, everybody, the rampant ego today is just incredible. I mean, you know, if this guy says that the bus ain't going to San Diego, it's going to San Diego now, because he wants to go to San Diego. I mean, the hell with the other 22. I mean, who are them guys? But, just, you know, this is a contemporary problem in our time. I'm fully expecting the door to burst open one night, just right here in the studio, you know, and there'll be a little 12-year-old acne-ridden... pre-adolescent, they'll come reeling in carrying a 12-gauge shotgun, and he will insist on doing the Shepherd show tonight. "You ain't doing a kind of show or what? I'm going to do the show tonight." All right. Be prepared, though. I'm wiry. I'll tell you, I've dealt with a lot of... But I don't really want to... You know, speaking of these... Of course, I think the feeling that the world is totally absurd presupposes that there is an alternative. Can you imagine how dull it would be? It would be unbelievable. First of all, every comic would be out of business. I mean, if everything went according to plan, and if everybody was beautiful and true, can you imagine what a dull world it would be if everybody loved everybody? What a sappy world. Good Lord. I mean, you know, I can't imagine anything more dull than heaven. I mean, sitting around all day long, the Muzak playing, you know, and it never rains, nothing. You just sit around. Oh, man. I think it's against man's nature. But yet, you know, this idea of the world is absurd is constantly, you know, pops up in people's talk, you know. And they imply that if you followed their plan, the world, of course, would be logical. Truth and beauty would spring up on all sides and everything would work. Groovy. Well, maybe this is part of the absurdity of man's condition, as he believes that there... is somewhere something that isn't absurd. That may be the ultimate absurdity. How about Shepherd getting into the Zen field here? But nevertheless, Now I'm gonna propose a question to you here. It's purely rhetorical. That doesn't mean all you dildocs are gonna immediately have to rush to your phone and call from PPAC, New Jersey. "Hey, Shepherd, that's a question I want to answer." No, rhetorical. Let's look that one up now. Let's all do some push-ups while you look up the word rhetorical. And it's spelled W-R-E-T,
Rhetorical. You look it up, okay? So, nevertheless, this is a rhetorical question. Do you really believe that the world would be a better place to live in if the world followed the ideas which you feel should be followed? We'll let you marinate there in your own juice for a couple of seconds. Well, see, part of the absurdity of the world is that you really believe it would be better if we followed your idiotic suggestions. Well, I'll just... Now, the next question arises. What is chaos, you know? I mean, look up the word. You know, you often use the word chaos. It's a great word. Would you? Somebody got a dictionary out there? Look it up for us, will you? That's spelled K-H-A-O-S. Chaos. Look it up. That'll throw them off. That'll take 20 minutes at least. So, I would like to suggest you look up two words. Get ready to write it down there, Jerry, because I'm going to need this. Look up chaos. I think that's about as good a description of our life as any. Now, on the other hand, I would like to look up... another good word is maelstrom. That's a good one. Maelstrom, that's, you know how to spell male. M-A-L-E. Look it up. That's the way you'll find it spelled under that. No problem there. You know, the thing that I'm impressed with is the advancing, if I may make a totally extraneous remark here. Last year, I taught, Jerry, would you please for a moment here? Last year, I taught a course at NYU. And the thing that impressed me about it was the advancing creative illiteracy among the students in the higher educational institutions. For example, I was impressed with the incredible variations of spelling. I mean, hardly anybody can spell anymore, which means, of course, a new kind of is sneaking into the world. And, of course, if you can't spell, that means you can't read very good, right? I mean, it would follow that if you can't spell, you can't decipher. But nevertheless, I used to get these papers that would come in once in a while, and I had to hire a translator. The translator, by the way, was a teacher at the university there who had been dealing with this type of illiteracy for years. You know, it's like reading Rorschach tests. And he'd sit down in 20 minutes, and he said, oh, I see what the guy means. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, he says, I went out to lunch Wednesday. And I said, oh, I see. Ew. I thought he was, Greek or something. But nevertheless, would somebody please look up chaos? We want to get that right now. I cannot continue until we get the official dictionary definition of the word chaos. I want it now. And I also want maelstrom, because I think these are fantastic. Just get the description. Have you ever really looked up these words? If you're curious, you know, we use so many words which hardly anybody ever actually looks up. Look up love. That's a word that's continually used on buttons. And it's a difficult world to define. I would like to suggest, too, that you look up life itself. Look it up. See what Webster has to say. And you know, often many of the definitions are negative. They rely on another definition, and they're self-canceling. For example, many dictionaries will define happiness as the absence of sorrow. You look up sorrow, it says sorrow is the absence of happiness. And you wind up bailing. Your boat is sinking again. But, I think that most people have a sense that the world around them is totally chaotic. And the most chaotic world is their own world. People secretly walk around, you know, they figure any minute now their real life is going to begin. Their real life. Up to this point, they've been ad-libbing, fooling around. And there will be a light bulb suddenly light over their head. And there will be the crucial phone call, and it'll all start falling into place. Like that sailor, you know, sitting up there in the balcony. He's sitting in the balcony, see, you can just see that moment. He's from the torpedo squad, you see, on the submarine. You never know where you're going to have this moment of satori, this moment of total insight. He's sitting up the balcony, and down there, Alexander the Great 48, is doing her thing with the ribbons. And I'll tell you, that doesn't even half describe what she did with the ribbons. Must have been wild. And he's in this joint, sailor from the torpedo boat, from the sub, Nathan Hale, which, by the way, is an interesting name for a sub. And she's doing a thing with the ribbons, and she throws this ribbon up, and it sails through the spotlight, through the smoky, smoky air of this 14th-rate Burleigh house. It sails through the air, and the sailor makes a lunge, and he has the crucial ribbon. his life was cast forward ever and anon. Now, you never know when you're liable to be sitting up in the balcony. Somebody's hanging around doing a thing with the ribbons, and you're going to hit the jackpot. But I'll tell you how the chaotic life, I mean, how you can develop a sense of the absurd. You've all heard of the playwrights, the absurd, of course. And I don't think they're absurd at all. I just mean I think they're reporting the way life is. And I'll give you an example. No, they really are. I don't think plays report the way life is, serious plays. I just don't believe it. I think most serious, non-realistic plays are totally unrealistic. Now, I'll give you an example what I mean by that. Just a typical example. Well, maybe this is why I believe it. I have just come to New York. See, let's just assume this. This is what happened. I have been in New York now at this point when this moment in my life happened. I was in New York maybe 6 months. Now, this city is a giant thing. I mean, it's like some enormous clam. Just sits on the bottom of the ocean and just sucks you in. There's no way for you to get on top of New York. Have you noticed lately, watching the news broadcasts, have you noticed how vaguely tired around the eyes Lindsay's beginning to look? Now, that doesn't mean he's getting older. It means he has looked into the face of it all. He knows something none of us know. He knows that at the very top, nothing. But all the things you think you can do, nothing. Now, does that mean somebody's lousing up? No. The way it is. I mean, it's like the Pharaoh standing on the sands of the Sahara, looking out over that vast wasteland. He says, I'll tell you what we got to do here. We got to build a pyramid. That will get it settled. It'll break up the monotony of the landscape. Give the people something to do. And so they do. They start building a pyramid. 17,000 slaves start carrying rocks and putting it up the top of this thing until finally 450 feet. You ever stood on the top of the Great Pyramid of Giza? I have. And by the way, all lit up on the bottom now with neon signs. You'll love that. And they have. And at night, it's really fascinating. At night, the light, the moon comes up and you look at the pyramids and they have this vast tape recorder that begins to play. And you hear the voices of the pharaohs, played by Alexander Scourby and other actor types. And it's exciting, you know, it's in stereo. And you wonder what the pharaohs themselves would have thought of it, you know, but that wouldn't matter because anybody who could think of a pyramid has already got a firm grasp of absurdity itself. And so I'm just new in New York, see? You know, fresh. Hey, how come? Come on, give me that call up here. I've got to get to the definition of chaos here, friend. You better help me out. And they're all looking it up under K? I see. We got 248 calls already. We said, all right, dictionary, don't have no word under chaos with a K there. Okay. And of course, Jersey speaks again. Vox Slobuli speaks out. But nevertheless, I'm fresh new in New York, you know, and when you first come to New York, you really seriously believe that you can get this town and, you know, this is all mine. You know, this town, I'm going to take this town, man. And it looks takeable, strangely enough. And so you go striding right down, yeah, the little one. You go striding right down 6th Avenue, see? It's all around you. It's fantastic. And, you know, it's just there. And, there's a vibrancy that comes drifting out. You don't know what it is, you see. You have to be here a while before you realize it's the air from Secaucus, New Jersey that you're vibrating to. There ain't anything else. But there's a sense of, you know, something about any second is about to happen to you, and it's going to be great. This feeling that any minute now, it's all going to unfold. It's going to be just, this is what New York is. There's no other city that makes you feel that way. In fact, you go to London and you have a feeling that something happened fantastic just before you got there. And it ain't ever going to happen again, which is very true about London. You just have a feeling of great events that have transpired. You see the Westminster Abbey and you see all this stuff. And there's a sense of the past. In New York, oh no. There's a sense of your immediate, fantastic destiny that's about to happen. And so I'm walking down the street, you know, oh, boy, I'm here, man. You know, Shepherd's here. Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. This is my town, man. Pa-pa-ta-ta-ta. Yeah, cha-cha-cha. Pa-pa-ta-ta-ta-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa like. You really do. You know what I'm talking about. Man, look at that. Oh, man. It's a place of infinite promise. Now, that's the key word, promise. You've heard that before. Fitzgerald said it. It is a world of infinite promise. and minute realization. Minute. Yeah. But it's like the ocean. The ocean looks like any minute now it's going to say something profound to you. And all it does is just keep rolling on. Boom. Once in a while, an iceberg sails by. And you say, all that ice, man, if I could take all that ice to Queens, think of the dough I could make, selling out the street corner with raspberry juice on the top of it. Well, I've got New York, you see, where I want it. I'm going to tell you a scary story. She, a terrible woman. Hey, Jerry. Before you get too deeply involved, will you tell your friend in there to hand him the George Antile recording, which I suspect... No, it's not there, so we won't need it. Okay, then don't worry about it. So I'm walking down the street. Now, get this story. She, this is the kind of thing... Now, if I wrote this in a theater of the absurd play, it would be hooted and booed at by Walter Kerr. I'm walking down the street, see, in New York. You know, it's just fantastic. And I'm walking... Let me think now. It was, yes, on Broadway. Yes, symbolically. So true, it was Broadway. Now, Broadway is a street to the out-of-towner has a certain magic to it. It really does. It's like the Arc de Triomphe in Paris. It's the Eiffel Tower. Broadway is it has infinite connotations. And so I'm walking along. By the way, that's not a bad name for a rock group. Charisma and the infinite connotations. So I'm sorry. So I'm... Gee, they didn't make it, did they? They're already a failure. So I'm walking along this street, Broadway, and I'm digging a scene. Well, there's a lot of traffic, you know, and I'm looking at everything with a great deal of excitement on all sides. And I can feel it growing inside of me, this mushroom cloud of anticipation. Something is about to happen. It's going to be great. Now, this has dogged almost every person who has a profession... who has come to New York, that the lightning will strike, not may, it will. The lightning will strike you. You will be transfigured. You will become one of the gods, if not you're all, you know, already halfway there, because you are in New York, after all. I mean, that gives you a godlike status to anybody in Goshen, Indiana. So I'm walking along Broadway, and I see a friend of mine across the street, see, who is also a fellow traveler along the yellow brick road of life. Who figures any minute now he's going to get to the Emerald City. So I see him across the street. Now, listen to me out here, you guys. Now, don't get involved in technicality for a minute. We got 5 minutes, so that's plenty of time. So I see him across the street there, see? And I said, hey, Don! And Don is slumping along. He's looking at New York, too. We have both come to New York at about the same time. We have emerged from the vast underbelly of America. We have come out of that great... inverted bowl of night, that vast land, that enormous hungry planet drifting forever in the dark seas of time, the Midwest. And so I see Don over there, and by the way, all Midwesterners are tremendously in love with New York. It's a love-hate relationship. It's a curious thing, yes it is. They're impressed. Why, who do you think all these tourists are that they always say about, you know, the town is full of tourists? Believe me, they don't come from Paris. They're not here, you know, visiting us from Rome. I'll tell you where they're from. Appleton, Wisconsin. That's where. Dry Gulch, Iowa. That's right. They're from Rabbit Hash, Kentucky. And they've come to gawk. Gawking is a positive action. And so I see Don across the street. Don, by the way, is now on WINS, in case you're curious. So the yellow brick road is still long for him. So I look across the road and I say, hey, Don! And Don turns around. And across this crowded thing, which is Broadway, he looks, and you can see there's confusion on his face at first because he's not expecting to meet somebody he knows in this fantastic maelstrom, this New York, see? And then a look of great delight crosses his face, see? He says, hey, Chef! Oh, wow! And I said, hey, Don, wow! And so with that, I go running across the street. Now, listen, here's the point of it. I go running across the street. Okay, you got it under control again? I go running across the street, and traffic is coming at me on all sides. See? Well, I'm a very good traffic runner. I can, you know, in and out, broken field running is my field. When all of a sudden, I can't believe what's coming around the corner. It comes right around in the 40 someplace. He comes around the corner on two wheels, and he's got me dead to rights. This guy's going to hit me. I can't believe it. Have you ever had this moment when you know you're going to get it? How many of you have ever had this moment of this is it? We've all had it in one way or another. Now, if you're seriously, I'm asking a serious question. That moment when you think you're going to get it. Well, I thought I had it. But at that moment, I mean, I was going to get hit, and I was really going to get hit. But that moment, something went through my mind, and it said, oh, no, not this way. And then it all happened in a split second. Something else said, but that's the way it had to be, man. The way it had to be. I see coming right at me a house. It's going 70 miles an hour. If it's going, it's a house. It's a little, it's like a dollhouse. It's got a gabled roof. And it's got a little flower box and everything. It's a house. I'm going to get run over on Broadway by the Chock Full of Nuts house. Have you seen that Chock Full of Nuts truck? You ever seen that truck? You haven't. Well, I'll have to explain it to you. There is a Chock Full of Nuts truck that goes around that looks like a little house. I was almost killed by the Chock Full of Nuts house. Well, for some, you know, motivation is a strong thing. It's an uncontrollable thing. You can't, you know, you never know what your motivation is going to be. Had that been a Mercedes, I'd have been hit. Because somehow that would have been right. Had it been a tremendous Rolls Royce, it would have been right. I'd have been hit. But somehow the nuttiness of getting run over by the Chock Full of Nuts house gave me added motivation. I went 30 feet in the air. I want to tell you, I was airborne. I seriously must have broken every known record, every known Olympic record for the broad jump. I took off and I sailed over three cabs and landed right on the middle of the sidewalk in front of Don. He said, what was that? I said, I don't know what it was. At that time, I didn't know, you see. Come on, bring the theme up. That's all. At that point, I didn't know what it was. I had no idea what that house was. I never heard a Chock Full of Nuts at that point. All I know is that the first moment of magic that happened to me in New York was that I was about to be run over by what looked like the Little Witch in the Woods candy house. And from that time on, nothing is absurd, friends. It all makes sense to me. It all makes sense. If tomorrow morning the New York Times announced that a group of scientists discovered that the Earth is a giant meatball and that we are all gravy on the meatball, and it has been discovered that the cosmos is an enormous mulligan stew that is about to be served to a bum. Yes, by the way, in case you're curious, we finally hold it up. The definition of chaos is this, and I suspect it's as good a description of your life as any. Confusion, state in which chance is supreme. That's about as close a description of your life as I can think of. In fact, anybody's life. No wonder Lindsay's got that funny look around the eyes. He knows something that most of us only suspect. It's the knowing that hurts. We can always hope that it's another way. He knows that it ain't.